KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm pleased to have as my guests the creators of the terrific new show on Fox, Shot Fire, the Gina Prince Bible. First of all, welcome back, Gina.
Thank you. Good to be
and
back.
Reggie Rock Bible. Thanks for coming by for the first time.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And what's so fun about this show, and I'm not sure if fun's the word to use or not, but it's got this real sense of momentum, and you're going to basically just throw people in the water. Which, I mean, I know you guys, there's certainly a politic involved that we have to get to, but as storytelling, it's just got this, it's, if you pardon the expression, just running up court all the time. And was that part of the way you guys conceived the show? You just wanted to have this constant sense of movement?
Yeah, I mean, so much of part of the storytelling what really is what happens next, what happens next, what happens next. We certainly have this creed for ourselves, which is to get the audience at the edge of their seats, and while they're leaning forward, hit them with the truth. So that was part of our mandate when we put it together. And finding a way to do that and still slow it down at times to take time to deal with all the character stuff that we want to do.
Also, we conceived this as a 10-hour film as opposed to 10 episodes of a series. And so Reg and I, once we got the pickup, we did a 70-page Bible, and it laid out the entire story. So we knew going in what it was going to be. And again, we just wanted to feel like a 10-hour film and not episodic. And that helps the momentum as well.
What was the thing, though, as you guys are building out the Bible, that surprised you the most about the characters?
Well, what we did, which was great, is instead of writing a typical character bio, we really borrowed something that Reggie had done for his previous film, which was each character, we wrote a monologue from their point of view.
First person, right.
And it's a really great exercise because it grounded us in their reality, and it was actually something we shared with each actor as well, and they were blown away by it. But to do that, it just gives them life and tells their story from their point of view. So when we start to tell the bigger story, we know their story.
In many ways, it was an exercise of getting out of the character's way. It was not looking at the characters outside in,
and not
but
judging
inside
them.
Out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's so much of these characters that could be judged.
Yes.
And that's a really interesting idea. Where'd that come from for you, Reggie? The idea of creating these monologues. It basically gives you a chance to sort of have these characters justify themselves, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's something I've been doing for a while where I'll write, you know, at least a one-page monologue for one of my main characters so that I could understand them. But then this, you know, we just took it to another level. This is a big undertaking because I have a lot of characters, but it just somehow in the process of us putting together this Bible and putting it together in a way that we wanted to do it, it just felt good. It felt organic to our process. And we said, well, like, this is not really the way people do Bibles. And then we're like, ah, the hell with it. Like, let's do it the way that we do it. But it was really great. As Gina said, we broke it up in many ways. So there's part of our Bible, which is these first person speeches, if you will, these like journal entries of all of our characters. And then the other part of the Bible is the mystery and like all the mystery beats. And that was really fun putting together too, because we had a lot of research. And then we're like, well, what if it goes this? Yeah. Well, what if it goes here? And it was, I think part of the movement is it was really a frantic process because we were doing it like during the Christmas. Was it before Christmas or was it Thanksgiving holiday last year?
It was a weird time because part of it, then I was in D.C. and you were in L.A. and we were doing it over the phone on the train. And
yeah, it was crazy. And so we were up against the deadline. And so
it kept getting longer because they sent us treatment.
As you said, it was 70-something. I think it was 80, but I think we cut it down. Because remember, we were embarrassed about how long it was.
It was because they sent us some things to work, to look at and say, this is what other creators have turned in. And they were 20 pages, 30 pages at the most. But, you know, our monologues alone were probably 30 pages. But what was great is when Fox got it, they were blown away by the monologues. They said, no one has ever done this, and now we want everybody to do this. So I think it allowed them also to see these characters, as you said, and not judge them, because so much of what we do in the show is to, the intent was to show this story from every seat in the house. And to do that, you have to not judge your characters. You have to get inside of them. And honestly, every character feels like they're right. And that makes more compelling storylines.
It's a treat with the, for you writers listening, the people who are making your lives a living hell now are the creators of Shotfire, Gina Prince and Reggie Rock by the Wood. I think, though, what's interesting about all this is that because there's so many people in it, and by the way, there aren't any real monologues like that in the show, which is interesting, but you know who everybody is as soon as you meet them, mm-hmm. which is this really fascinating thing to do, because what that means is the actors all know their character motivations, mm-hmm. so they have something to play rather than just trying to figure out what's on the page.
Right.
Getting these actors, all they had to go on, this incredible ensemble, all they had to go on was the pilot script. And so to get most of them, some who were not even in, like Stephen Moyer, Richard Dreyfuss, their characters weren't even in the pilot script. And that was Reggie sitting down with them, and he'll say more, but and telling them the arc of their characters and showing them these monologues and these books that we put together. I mean, it was, you know, incredible leap of faith that they
It was a crazy leap of faith.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about it. Stephen Moyer, Richard Dreyfuss, there was nothing written for them. Except for the monologues. And the monologues were helpful. But we also had these books with images that told a little bit of their backstory with cinematic images and had real-life references for who their characters were and had central questions for who the characters were.
Were there real-life analogs for everybody in this piece or just a few people?
I'd say about half.
Yeah.
Okay. Because what you're talking about really is what actors do. And I think that's really interesting because it helps actors understand that you know what it is that they want from a piece of material, doesn't it?
Well, that's the good training I got from the High School Performing Arts. I mean, you know, and here's the reality, though, which is so crazy. So much of the stuff I learned in high school, Gene and I use in our process.
Like what else?
Like every character has an objective, obstacle, and action. And many writers, many execs, a lot of people will sit and talk about what does a character want? What does a character need? And it's a part of our process. But because I came from it from this actor point of view, you know, a long time ago in high school performing arts, that what we really dial in on is what is a character, you know, what is a character doing? So basically Stanislavski is all about acting is doing. And so when you know what your character is doing, then it makes your character active. And yeah. Sometimes that's how, like sometimes as writers, you write something like, why is the character not jumping off the page? And why is the dialogue not jumping off the page? And so sometimes you can force dialogue. But when we just really dial into knowing what our characters are doing and making it active, it just flows more organically.
What's amazing is I went to UCLA Film School. I didn't learn that. I learned that from Reg, Sean, when we were hired on A Different World, and we just started working together and helping each other with our scripts. And that was something that he taught me that I thought, wow, why didn't I learn this in film school?
That's when you used to call me Professor Bythewood. You can yeah. It's okay. You can say that. Call me Professor if you want. No,
I have to. Well, we are on a college campus, so it makes all the sense in the world, Professor, if I may call you that. But what I think is so interesting that gets to this thing that I like about your work is just that the actors always seem to have a physical understanding of what it is they're doing, which I think is really interesting. And it also has got to help, too, that you've got 10 hours, you're not trying to figure out what they're going to be doing in episode 26 when you know yes. you can actually really sort of condense in addition to giving them motivation, right?
Yeah.
That's what we loved about doing this limited series. Even going in, we had told Fox, because Reg and I were not looking to go back to television. We both had screenplays that we were working on, but this was an opportunity that we, to be able to tell this story in any way we wanted was not something we could pass up. But we had said going in, we didn't want it to be more than 13. And the fact that we got to do 10, it allows you to have a beginning, middle, and end. You're not trying to stretch a story out to fill episodes. You get to pack it in and to know for us that it had an ending the audience knows that there is an ending, that you're going to know the end of the, you know, the answers to the mysteries, I think motivates people to watch as well. You know, you're not going to be left hanging.
I guess this is the point I ask you guys to explain, to talk a little bit what Shots Fired is. Now, we talk about it in abstract terms. What's the story, Professor?
Thank you. You know, I knew it was going to come back, by the way. Shots Fired takes a look at two shootings in a small southern town. A unarmed white kid is killed by a black police officer, and an unarmed black kid is killed, but we don't know by who. And so Shots Fired is a why done it and a who done it. We know Jesse Carr, the white kid, was killed, but we don't know why. We know Joey Campbell is killed, but we don't know by who. And so it's really the merging of these two mysteries in a small southern town where Ash Aquino, played by Sanaa Lathan, and Preston Terry, played by Stephon James, both working from the Department of Justice, come in to investigate and see if there's something to hold police accountable for or not.
And it's interesting, too, because there is all that machinery of the mechanisms, rather, of the murder mystery, but there's also a political drama taking place here, too. Mm-hmm. The cops and the local people on the ground, everybody's fighting for their own piece of territory. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one thing they feel they have to own. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that was something that you guys are thinking about, too, in terms of building this out. That is horrifying as this story is, and we just saw it played out again in Texas recently. And we know unfortunately, it's going to have primacy for as long as any of us is going to be alive.
Yeah.
But for it not to feel like it's hectoring people or just hammering home political points, it's got to be about people fighting for something in this, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What we really wanted to deal with, as we talked about, is we wanted this show to be able to show incidents like this from every angle and also touch on the fact that they affect everything from the street all the way up to the highest levels of power. You absolutely see, you know, what's going on right now in the administration and the Civil Rights Division being gutted by Sessions, the fact that they're not going to pursue justice for Alton Sterling. How does that then reverberate?
Well, that woman was just today convicted of laughing during Sessions' confirmation hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, now if police departments, suddenly all these consent decrees that were coming down under the previous administration, they're being pulled back. Now these reforms aren't happening, and it's going to keep trickling down all the way until you have, well, you still have incidents where a police officer feels it is okay to shoot into a car full of teenagers that's driving away. So we just
after after misreporting it to the media.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
So it really touches everything from the victim to the victim's family to the police to government.
I think that's the trick. We have a show where we felt like we have so much we want to say, but we have to do it through character. We have to do it through characters that have very strong drives, very strong needs, all of them fighting for something, all of them have something that they really want. And so, you know, our hope is that, you know, if an audience gets lost in the character and invested in the character, all the other things that we are hoping to deal with will come through in character.
Absolutely.
You know, it won't sound like the writer's talking, but it'll sound like, you know, these are things that the characters are dealing with and in some ways, you know, reeling from all these events that happen in a small southern town.
We'll take a break. I'm talking with the creators of the Fox series Shot Fire, Reggie Rock, and Gina Prince. By the way, this is the treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
The treatment. I'm giving the professor a little bit of extra time to swallow his water. I'm talking to the creators of Shots Fired on Fox, Reggie Rock and Gina Prince, by the way. And I guess, though, as much as we're talking about what motivates you guys to do the show, and again, it's interesting to be reminded that the, you know, the head of the Justice Department is the chief law enforcement official in the United States who is also charged with enforcing the Constitution. And what the show is also about, too, is people's at a time like now becomes a lot more powerful. Mm-hmm. Everybody's different take on what that is in this show, even everybody's idea of what is said in that. And I just think that's really interesting that it works with both subtext in the show, but also as text with the characters.
Mm-hmm. You touched on in terms of our characters, are they based on real people? And as we said, about half. And you know, one of the absolute templates for Preston Terry was Eric Holder, and for us to have the opportunity to speak with him, and then for Stephon James, the actor, to be able to speak with him a couple times was really phenomenal. But for us to listen to him and the way he talked about the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department as, you know, it was a crown jewel. And it's so important, especially given this day and age. I mean, it's there to protect the people. And it seems that there's been an absolute shift where it's about protecting the government.
And he came in at a point where it lay fallow for 8 years under the previous administration. Yes. So he had a lot of correcting to do there, too.
Yes,
absolutely. And one of our consultants who works in the L.A. office, she was there during the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and she's barely hanging on right now. But she did say that under Bush, the majority of cases that they did were immigration, but in terms of getting people out, not protecting folk. And then under the Obama administration, she suddenly felt like she was doing the work that she thought she would always do. And that's absolutely, you know, our character Preston and what we're trying to put into the world is what the Justice Department should be doing, because, again, it's about protecting the people.
It's also interesting, too, between these two characters. You've got him who's really, who almost works from the head, and she's completely the heart. I mean, and I just wonder how that sort of division came up, because she's almost an instinctive cop rather than a thinking cop. Mm-hmm. And we also get a chance to see the way that damages her home life, too, trying to bring those same kind of, how best to put this, prerequisites of that she might have in terms of being a law enforcement officer into her home. They don't play so well. But sort of dividing these people into almost like head and body is really interesting, and I wonder where that came from.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say, you know, I think that was part of the fun there as well, is are having these two characters that just approach life differently, and also to be able to have these 10 hours to let the characters transform. You know, Preston comes in really with this aspiration of like being, you know, this is never said in dialogue. It's part of our inner monologue for him, but wanting to be the youngest attorney general
sure,
in the history of a country. And so he comes in looking to win. And it's really more about him and his success and his own personal platform.
But also by almost sheer power of reason. I mean, he can like talk. And for him, the talk has the same kind of power that a gun in the fist does for her.
Right, yeah. Right. And you know, do you want to talk a little bit more about Ash?
Ash was a fascinating character to put together, really because of some of the real-life templates that we use as well. But for you never get to see, especially on television film, a woman in that position, and to deal with the reality of a woman in that position, a female cop who was on the streets, who worked in the cartels, the things that she had to put up with, sexism, racism, but also in these experiences where your life is on the line, where you've killed people, it is absolutely going to affect you and your soul and your psyche. And a character even tells Ash at one point that to go against bad people, you have to meet them where you're at. And she has not really figured out how to bring herself back. And so how does that affect her as a mother, as a girlfriend, as a wife? I mean, she has some serious issues, and she killed somebody in the line of duty, and she got away with it. She told the truth, but she was let off, and that's something karmically that she feels is going to come back on her. So, you know, she leads with a fearlessness because there's a part of her that thinks if she is gone, her daughter's going to be safe. So that recklessness makes her a great cop, but it does not necessarily make her a really good person. So we felt that that mixed with Preston, who was so straight and narrow and by the book, would be pretty combustible.
Yeah, and I think one of the fun things was just going along, seeing how both characters then start to move towards each other's mm-hmm. point of view, each other's way of dealing with life and the world. And so this very calculated person in Preston becomes less calculated as he goes on, and in many ways, Ash becomes more calculated.
Except, isn't it interesting? She seems to take to it more than he does. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like he's like, I don't know if I like what I'm becoming. And it's almost this interesting difference where she operates better at night and he's at the more of a daylight person. But it's really right. fascinating seeing that because, you know, when in a bar when the sun goes down, we see who she really is. And the idea that there's control for her suddenly, like, mm-hmm. she gets some fulfillment out of that. But he doesn't like it. I mean, this is really interesting stuff that you guys are doing with these people.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just going to say, I mean, one of the things that was, you know, very exciting about Hour 7, which, you know, we've recently aired, is that, you know, you see Preston standing up in front of a crowd of protesters. And if anyone in the audience hasn't seen it, you know, Hulu on demand, like, please come back and catch it up. Because, you know, again, it is a 10-hour film. And that's the hardest part. It's like if you miss one, it still makes sense. But you just want everybody to see the journey.
And but that's so also a big character note to miss. You got to see him in front of that crowd.
You got to see him in front of the crowd. And he – and just this sort of, like – pledge he makes, yeah. And we were so excited by this, by getting him there, where he just
but
basically
it's
says,
of, it's all drawn out of him this way. It's almost like he's possessed by something when this happens.
You know, he admits, like, maybe I came here as a puppet, but I'm not leaving as one. Mm-hmm. And just getting him to that place, something that we kept talking about. We kept telling Fox it's going to happen, but we needed to, you know, we needed to take our time and get there.
Because it's funny, it's almost in a weird way, like she has more self awareness than he does. And that moment you're talking about in the most recent episode is really sort of like, wow. And just talk about getting him there and his reaction to himself. It's really because it's you could play that as a heroic moment. Mm-hmm. And in some ways it is. But for him, it's not because
he should have been there.
He should have been there. And also he has to recognize what he's been up until this moment.
Well, what was great in starting out, even as we were talking about the characters in the show, it was – that we had this opportunity to have two black leads, two black folk in law enforcement who saw the world completely differently. It was great to show that we're not a monolith, that we have different thoughts, but they're also coming at their point of view of the world because of how they were raised. He went through private schools. He had a very protective life. He sees a brass ring and he's narrowly focused on that, where Ash has grew up completely differently, has been within law enforcement, knows the corruption that exists in some places. And so to bring those two together, and as Reggie said, it's a push-pull about whose mindset is going to win out. And Ash is tugging as hard as she can at him to bring him closer to where she is, which is hard on your sleeve. We are here to get justice for these dead boys.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to the creators of Shots Fired on Fox, Reggie Rock and Gina Prince Bythewood, about stuff. But the show is Shots Fired on Fox. But I think for Ash, for me, and I'm saying this, and the difference between her and Preston is that she knows, even when she's falling apart, she knows who she is.
Yes.
I mean, there's that self-awareness that, you know, the quote-unquote bad cop often doesn't have. And mm-hmm. neither of these, by the way, it's not the classic good cop, bad cop thing, but also that she knows and he doesn't. And I was wondering where that came from for you guys, that idea that he is just so on this mission. And also he's so entitled that he gets pleasure out of manipulating, like, the governor's assistant and all these things that he does. And when he sort of is forced, you know, to deal with the world at night and to see that you can't just go in and use the methods he's used before – and that's shocking to him. It really is. I just think that's a really interesting thing to do with a character, that whereas she's on a downward spiral, at least she knows where she's going. He does not.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the, you know, may sound a little strange here to say, but one of our real-life templates as well was Dr. King, in that, you know, he was 26 years old when he led the Montgomery bus boycott. Didn't initially want to lead that, but he did, and did not intend to become like the leader of the civil rights movement. It escalated and it went into a place that he never thought it would go. And so we talked a lot about that as well with Preston, that
That's really the protest moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he goes from seeking to do a good job to seeking to find justice. And
oh, right, you say going from doing his job well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in addition to doing his job, because he's kind of self-serving.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And so knowing, I think, where we want him to end up required us to start him in a totally different place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's literally becoming, like, darker. And this thing that also, the suit's not armor anymore. I mean, he doesn't have that uniform to wear that right. speaks for him. Going from being a politician to having to deal with politics is a really interesting thing to show. Just your excitement about this, we were talking before we got started, so I want to get into a little bit. We have a little bit of time left. Is you guys happen to be lucky enough to work with Jonathan Demme in one of his last jobs. We're just sort of saying that I then thought about his age. I knew him a little bit for a while until I saw a picture of him recently and realized, oh, he was in his 70s because mm-hmm. he had so much enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. They seemed like a much younger person.
Yeah, well, on our first conversation with him, you know, Gene and I got on the phone with him. He had read the pilot. We talked to him about what it is we were really looking to do with Shots Fired. And he was so enthused, but a bit reluctant and not knowing if this was a good idea for him to come in. You know, I'm a white guy, you know, and wanted to get our sense of that. And even though he felt he had a lot to say, and you know, we made a pact, which is that we were going to collaborate on the vision, but as well, you know, allow him to have his very strong points of view as a filmmaker. And it was so great to work with him. He really challenged everybody around him to be better. We were all better, you know, for working with him. It was like, in many ways, it was like film school being on set with him. But his energy, his level of energy really put all of us to shame.
To be able to sit behind Jonathan Demme and just learn was just a phenomenal gift. And, you know, Sanaa said something interesting, which is absolutely true. She said she was wondering if she would be able to tell what made him an Oscar-winning director. You know, what is the difference? Because we had great directors for Shots Fired.
There's a stellar cast of directors as you did actors.
Exactly. So she wanted to know, could she tell? And you could within the first couple minutes of even in the production meeting. His focus, his passion, his preparation, the way that he pulled everyone in and just seeing the crew sitting around the table, everyone was like, what can I do to help you? And he really is like a magician. He just brings you into his energy and passion, and you want to do better. And his hour, it was our uprising hour. It was our biggest hour, and we had chosen him specifically for that one. I mean, it's a beautiful, not only visually, but emotionally. And the performances, I mean, you know, Reg and I directed. We think we directed pretty great hours, and it was great to just see the performances, the rawness, the realness that he brought out.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I don't think we're ashamed to say we were definitely stealing some tricks and spoke with him about it as well. And it was in many ways, it was very interesting because we are protecting, you know, our vision as the creators of the show. Mm-hmm. And the other side of it, we're like learning from this amazing filmmaker.
We're out of time. Thank you guys so much. Really, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. The creators of Shots Fired on Fox, Reggie Rock and Gina Prince Bythewell, and our recording engineer here at KCRW, who also mixes the show, is Kat Yore, is edited by Blake Wright, who's an associate producer. I'm going to go dance on the tables in the cafeteria. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to KCRW.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.